Hello, and welcome to a special year-end episode of Fade Out, the podcast that examines the final films of Hollywood's brightest lights. Proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, Rob Kelly. And as I mentioned in the previous regular episode of Fade Out, this is a special year-end show where we're going to be talking about the films that we saw in 2025. And joining me are the Siskel and Ebert of the medical profession. First up, Dr. Chris Lewis. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Rob. I've never been introduced like that before.
I'm glad. And making an unprecedented second appearance on the show in just one calendar year, Dr. Ange. Hi, Ange.
Hey, thanks for inviting me. I was always more of a Siskel guy than an Ebert guy, so hopefully okay. That's
you guys can fight over which one of you is Siskel and which one is Ebert. That's fine. That's between the two of you. Yes, this is something that I've been kind of wanting to do for Fade Out, and I just have never quite had the organizing principle to get it done, which is namely just kind of go over the year in movies that I and my guests had, because I've talked about it little bits here and there about what I've seen on the big screen, things like that. And so I thought this would be really fun. And luckily both doctors, Andrew, Chris are here to joining me to talk about what we've all seen. Now, some of the stuff we're going to go over was seen at home. A lot of it is seen in the theater. There's going to be a little bit of overlap. There's a couple of movies that we've all seen at the same time, but I think there's going to be a lot of diversity here. So we're just going to start. I'm going chronologically. I'm going to start with the first movie that I saw in the theater, and we'll work our way down to just basically this month. But since I'm going to start with Dr. Chris, this is your first time on the show. What's the first movie you want to talk about?
Okay. Like you, Rob, I thought recording movies is the sort of thing I should do, really. And do you remember, boys, when Twitter was fun and not the raging hellscape it is now? You know, people used to have lists of things that they'd seen, and I would think I should do this. And then it was, I think it might even have been you, Rob, introduced me to Letterboxd at the end of 2023. So I've been trying to sort of keep it out. So it's, I don't think they're sponsoring this show, but it's a really good way to sort of diarize the movies that you watch. So I did some stats. I watched 75 movies at the time of recording this year. 26, so about a third, were new to me. That's not to say that they're new movies. And I saw 10 in the cinema. So the first one I was going to mention that we saw in the cinema was at the start of the year. It was had quite a bit of Oscar buzz around it at the time, was A Real Pain. If you remember this was a vehicle for Jesse Eisenberg and Kieran Culkin, who won the Oscar for supporting actor for this movie. Yeah. And I've got what I wrote. I don't write reviews for all the movies. I try and write ones for ones that I've seen the first time. And I said, what I said about this was, I'm glad we saw this thoughtful movie, which skillfully portrayed a roller coaster of emotions while maintaining credibility for the story and respect for the difficult emotions around the central theme of Nazi genocide of Jews in Poland in World War II. Two cousins who could not be more different in temperament and personality make a pilgrimage to the town where their grandmother grew up and from where she escaped to America. Joining a guided tour gives moments of laugh out loud comedy, genuine emotion, and honest human decency. Both cousins are given plenty to reflect on, although whether either will make any lasting changes is left in ambiguity. The only criticism I have is that the two main characters are so similar to the personalities of the actors who's playing them, it's difficult to see David and Benji, who are the characters, as anything other than Jesse Eisenberg and Kieran Culkin. That aside, this is one of the best movies I've seen in a long while. Love this movie. Really good. Don't know if you saw it. It was a difficult subject, but it was done with real humanity. Some really funny moments. Kieran Culkin is off the wall. Definitely deserved his award. So, I would recommend this film. I don't know. Did either of you, did this pass you by at all? Or did you see it? Or was it on your radar?
I heard about it, but I didn't see it. I had no idea that that's what it's about. I knew it was a travelogue of sorts of the two of them, but I had no idea that was the subject matter.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite hard hitting. This is a year ago, so I'm having to delve back into my memory. But basically, they join a sort of guided tour of the Polish ghettos and how it affects them. They both had a very close relationship with their grandmother, but quite a different relationship with their grandmother. Jesse Eisenberg is sort of stereotypical, buttoned up, quite neurotic, newly married, got a new baby, and he goes away with his cousin Kieran Culkin, who is off the wall, probably mentally not great, on a lot of medication, and the two different characters, how they come together in this travelogue, terrific. I would thoroughly recommend it. Really good watch. Not an easy watch always, obviously, given the subject matter, but beautifully acted, beautifully shot. Yeah, a winner for the first movie of the year that
Wow.
we saw in the cinema.
And did you see
Amazing.
that?
I did not. I did
Okay.
not. Completely
Wow.
missed me.
All right. So, all right. So what's your first pick?
Well, I have been told about this Letterboxd thing, and my kids have actually said, like, Dad, you should do this. So I said, starting in January, I'm actually going to try to do this as a way to sort of catalog the movies that I see. I am one of those people that record a ton of movies off of TCM. So if you ask me how many movies I watch, it's probably north of 150 because it's just like I'm
Wow.
always watching something that's on TCM that catches my interest. I also have like I'm a cable television guy, so there's like I have Paramount and Stars and that sort of stuff. And if something even sounds remotely interesting, I'll DVR and I'll watch it when I'm sort of home. So many flicks. But the first one that I saw in the theater is probably one I'm going to bet that neither of you saw. I would not have seen it. But my oldest daughter turned 26 last January. We were like, let's do something for your birthday. She was like, why don't we go to the movies? It's been a while since we went. And so there was a movie called The Wolfman starring Julie Garner. Which came out in January and came and left very, very quickly. And in it, her husband and her daughter and her go to his father's house deep, deep, deep in the woods of someplace, because the father has gone missing and he inherits the house. And there's always been, you start out with a scene when the husband is young where there's like, don't go into the woods. Those beings are there. And then ultimately the husband gets bitten by something and gets infected. And over the course of like really 48 hours, mutates into something horrific slash wolfmanish. The funny, there are two things that are funny about it. One, it is clearly a backdoor remake of David Cronenberg's The Fly. Like the whole plot line of like, he is slowly being changed by something. He is slowly losing control of who he is. He loves these people, but now he's like thinking about doing violence to them. And the ultimate ending of it is so akin to The Fly that I was like, I don't even know. Like maybe Cronenberg could sue for plagiarism, although probably not because it's much more wild in nature than technologic. But so much of it overlapped theme-wise, to the point where, spoiler alert, spoilers okay.
Warning everybody, if you're listening to this, we're going to do brief spoilers for some things. So if you don't want to hear it, hit the forward button like 10, 15 seconds.
So like at the end, the guy who has been mutated into this thing literally holds a gun to his head and looks at Julie Garner to say, like, kill me. The way Brundlefly at the end of The Fly holds the gun to his head and looks to Gina Davis to say, like, kill me and put me out of my misery. So in and I'm like a lycanthrope werewolf guy, and so I was like, this is like werewolf adjacent. I don't know if I'm into it, but I'll tell you the real fun thing about it was that I watched a lot of movies with my kids. I watch movies a particular way, and I'm always trying to figure out like, why would the director do that? Like, why are they lingering on that tattoo in the first 15 minutes? That's going to come into play later on. It has to. Like, why are they mentioning this poisonous herb out of nowhere? That probably is going to come back to mean something. And so at the end of it, my daughter was like, yeah. Clearly, it was going to end up being the grandfather because they showed that tattoo early on for some reason. And I thought that they were going to kill them with the poisonous herb they mentioned. Nothing ever came of it. And I'm like, wow, the apple does not fall far from the tree. Watching movies and trying to dissect them in a way that's fascinating. So I would not necessarily recommend this movie, but it was a wonderful experience for me to have with my kid, to sort of like go over how we were both thinking our way through the plot as it sort of unraveled.
That's great. Now that was Lee Whannell, right? I think the director of The Invisible Man from a couple years
It
earlier.
was Lee Whannell who directed The Invisible Man with Elizabeth Moss.
So they were definitely thinking him as like the new Universal Monsters reboot guy, kind of. So I don't know. The Wolfman was not as successful financially, so that might be dead in the water, but I think they were clearly lining him up for that by having him do Invisible Man and now Wolf Man on top of it.
Yeah.
So, okay. Sorry, for me, the first thing we saw, and by the way, going forward, when I say we're talking about me, my wife Kelly, because outside of one film, we saw 30 films in the theater this year.
Wow.
Outside of one film, which I will mention, we saw them together. So when I say we, that's who I'm talking about. So anyway, the first film that we saw was The Brutalist, the 4-hour period drama with Guy Pearce and Adrien Brody, who won the Oscar for it. This was the kind of thing where I had heard some good things. I loved the old school vibe of being shot in VistaVision. And it was the sort of thing where I'm like, look, am I going to sit through a 4-hour movie at home uninterrupted? Probably not. Right? There's no way the dog isn't going to need a walk. They're just, even if I put my phone away, it's just not. So it was sort of like, if we want to see it, let's see it the way it was intended. So we went to one of our favorite theaters down here, the Enzian, which is a beautiful theater. It's like a little nightclub, kind of like an Alamo Drafthouse kind of vibe. And I really enjoyed The Brutalist. Thought it was engaging, involving. Is it perfect? No, but it held my attention for the entire length. I mean, I think it's like 3 hours and 40 minutes. I mean, it's got an intermission. It has the most creative intermission I've ever seen in a movie, in that it actually gives you a piece of the movie to just look at for the 2-minute intermission. Like, it's actually part of the movie. It's not just the word intermission on a screen. It's a photograph that is going to let you know what's coming in sort of part two. So I really enjoyed it. I was rooting for it to win Best Picture. It did not. Adrien Brody again won the Oscar, and he talked for like 75 minutes when he won. But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was actually very good. Either one of you guys seen that?
No, I'm glad you enjoyed it because it was one of those, again, it was one of those with a lot of Oscar buzz around it. And we saw the trailer and I kind of went, this is the sort of movie that feels a bit like eating neat wheat germ. I know it's good for me. I know it's supposed to be the sort of thing I should watch. And it was black and white and it is 17 and a half days long. And I just went, I just can't. So I'm really glad that you enjoyed it because it was the sort of thing I felt bad about not watching, but I just couldn't quite cross the line on it. So I'm glad you enjoyed it. And maybe it's the sort of thing in fact, in some ways, maybe watching it at home is the best way because I can take it in chunks and go, okay, tonight I have an hour. I can watch the first hour of this, and tomorrow I have 2 hours. I can chunk it up, and then that might be make it a bit more easy to go for. But it felt a little intimidating, I have to say, at the time. But didn't watch it. But if you say it's worth watching, I'll give it a go.
I thought it was genuinely engaging and good performances, and it has some really great lines in it. And I have now, I mean, there's other movies that we'll talk about that are longer, but I have now come to the conclusion that I like movies. Movies for me either need to be 87 minutes or 3.5 hours and nothing in between. Because movies that are 3.5 hours usually ju are justify their length. Like, that's a story
Yeah.
you need to tell if you're going to make something so uncommercial that it's going to run 3.5 hours. But it's the movies that are like 2 hours and 17 minutes where I'm like, there's always like a good 30 minutes in the middle where I'm like, the movie's not going anywhere. Why did this need to be 2 hours? So I'm really like alpha and omega on this. I'm like, super short, super long. That's it. Nothing in between. I don't want any other movie in between. So
You like It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. So that has
I
an
do.
intermission,
Yes.
but
Mad, Mad, Mad World as well.
I'm betting the intermission in It's a Mad, 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 Mad World is different to the intermission in It's in The
You
Brutalist.
can't
Different
you
vibe.
nobody can hear it because the mic is so sensitive, but at mention of Mad, 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 Mad World, my wife behind me just went, ugh. So I forced her to see that, I have to admit, many years ago. So okay.
Wait, Albert, can I just say that I echo some of the things that were said about The Brutalist. I have not seen it. When it came out and they said it's nearly 4 hours, I was like, I don't know if I want to spend $20. I might not like it. There's like a risk-benefit value about this. Plus, it's 4 hours. Like, I better know I like it to commit that much time in the theater. I'm going to wait for it to come out at home. And it has sat on the to watch list that Anna and I have because every time we're like, oh, it's 4 hours, right? Even though we could watch it in 20-minute aliquots if we wanted to,
Right.
it's still this intimidating beast of a movie. And so we both want, like, we're both like, oh, and it got all of that buzz, and like everybody really liked it. We should watch this. And it just lingers there at the back end of the to watch list because of how long it is. But
My suggestion would be watch the first 2 hours and then it gets to the intermission and stop there. And if you're compelled, then you go back to it the next day or whatever. But like that first 2 hours, if that propels you to keep watching it, then great. But if it doesn't, it doesn't. You know what I mean? But that there the intermission is almost right down the center. And it and thematically, it has a bit of a there is definitely an act one, act two kind of structure. It's not just the movie doesn't just stop. It's not like Monty Python and Holy Grail where they drop the intermission randomly for 30 seconds just to
yeah.
F with people. It has a definite part one, part two feel to it. So you could watch it kind of like that. So Chris, what's next?
Cool. Okay. So the next film I want to talk about is probably my film of the year that I saw. And that was, I'm not sure if it's September 5 or September 5th. This was a terrific, and again, to your point, Rob, this is a nice short, beautifully tense movie that just is the perfect length and not overlong at all. There's not an ounce of fat in this movie. I wrote on Letterboxd a tense bottle episode of a film which is part journalistic ethics, part technical manual of 70s TV production, part real life terrorist thriller. This is the story of the ABC Sports broadcasting the 72 Olympic Games in Munich. I believe the thing was it was live for the first time. They just got the satellite technology right. And these sports journalists who are more set up to talk about, how Mark Spitz's, breaststroke length speed is, optimized, find themselves in the middle of this terrible news, breaking news story with the massacre of Italian, Israeli athletes by Palestinian terrorists. It is absolutely tense. Like I say, it is beautifully understated, beautifully performed. Peter Sarsgaard is probably the biggest name in it. There's a couple of British actors, but it's a German film. I think from memory, there's a bit of German in there, so you got to watch the subtitles a little bit. But absolutely spot on, really tense, really good thriller. Can't recommend this highly enough. My film of the year.
Wow. All right. That's on
Yeah.
my that's on Paramount Plus and we have that and it's on I'm like one of the three people that has Paramount Plus. So it's on my watch list, my queue list, but I've not watched it because I love movies about media. So that is something
Yeah.
that I would definitely want to see.
I think if you like how they made TV back in the day and how they had to time it for the satellite going over and how they negotiated for time here and there, I think if you like that, you will love that because that's also going on against this breaking story that they are literally yards away from. So yeah, if you like all of that, I think you will really appreciate this movie.
All right.
Yeah, I saw it and I also agree. Just brilliant. And like you say, so tight that it felt like claustrophobic and tense, as I'm sure it felt in real life. And part of it, like you say, the sports people are like, we are on hand here. This is our story. And like the political journalism in the States are like, you're the sports guys, you don't get to cover this. And they're like, no, we're journalists and we can do this. And then how they like fake, like we have to get this tape from the cordoned off Olympic Village back to the studio so that we can show this. And like, oh, we have to cut this live feed because we're actually giving information to the terrorists that
Wow.
people are hunting them down. And all of that was great. And even one of the things that I thought was cool about it was that they said, we have to announce this live. And when they go to the live thing, it was the actual live, like the Wide World of Sports 1970 broadcast that they like spliced into this movie. So that, oh my God, that was like actually the Wide World of Sports announcer, the real one. I remember seeing him growing up sort of announcing it. So I thought that was like a really, really good movie, really good movie.
All right, I've got to check this out. I mean, again, I like movies about the Olympics too. Like, I love the Olympics. So, like, this is media and the Olympics. So that sounds, I will have to absolutely check this out. So,
Do not sleep on this film any longer, Rob.
okay. All right. All right. Ange, what's up next?
I have no idea what order I saw these things in. I just sort of wrote things down. But I saw The Roses with Benedict Cumberbatch and Elizabeth Coleman, which is about a couple whose marriage dissolves and go apart. And of course, it's like there's the War of the Roses with Danny DeVito and Michael Douglas, and it's sort of like based on that with this British bent. And honestly, we went because Anna was like, "I love Elizabeth Coleman, I love Benedict Cumberbatch. I'm sure this is going to be a hoot." And it was very funny. It also was a little bit triggering, I'll say, for some kind of like and what it ends up becoming much more surreal, right? The beginning part of the movie is something bad happens to his career, something good happens to her career. Their lives sort of like go into disarray, and slowly what was like a tight couple that loved each other have sort of like completely drifted apart in the worst possible way. And then at the end it becomes like a Three Stooges episode with each one of them trying to like kill each other or harm each other physically in an almost slapstick sort of a way. So it was hard to sort of like put those two things together. It felt like a little bit jarring. But the performances were spot on. I love those performers. It felt sort of real in an interesting way. And then I'll just say there was this one scene. And you know that movies are well done well when there's a scene in it that strikes you as so real that it made me feel something. When you're in your mid 50s and you've seen a billion movies, when you feel something, you're like, "Oh my God, this is like powerful filmmaking to like elicit something like that." And so there's a scene where the husband basically says, "This great thing happened to me today, and I didn't want to tell you because I knew that you would ruin it somehow, and I wanted to keep it beautiful, and so I didn't share with you." And that unfortunately felt very real to me in a significant way. I'm sorry to put it down on this, but I would say well acted, well performed, well shot, slapsticky in places. And I would say probably better than the Michael Douglas. Oh my God, what's her name from
Kathleen
Romancing?
Turner.
Kathleen Turner. Probably better. Because it's like a little bit more highbrow-ish.
Wow.
So the
Okay.
roses.
We wanted to see that, and it came and went so fast that we missed it, partly because the supporting players are Andy Samberg and Kate McKinnon, that we
Yes.
both like very much. We were like, wow, them as the
Yes.
supporting people, I want to see that, but
Yes.
we just haven't gotten around to it because it just came and went
Yeah.
so fast. So
They're absolutely in those roles.
It's really weird because over here, obviously, Olivia Colman and Benedict Cumberbatch were all over the promos. And then on YouTube, it was all Andy Samberg and I'm afraid I don't know the other lady,
Kate
but they
McKinnon.
were all on. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was that they obviously tailored their promo for a UK audience and an American audience to go with who's best known where. Okay. You do that side of the Atlantic, you do the other side.
That's good. Good marketing. Well, it
Yeah.
didn't really work for the movie, so I guess not. I saw a lot of repertoire films this year. So when I'm getting through a stretch of them, in the interest of keeping the show under 4.5 hours long, I'm gonna just shoot through the when I've seen a bunch of repertory films. I'm just gonna go through all them all at once because I don't have a whole lot to say about them. Just because I've seen classics. So we in a row we went to go see Ed Wood, one of my favorites of all time. In the Mood for Love, which was a classic, which neither one of us had ever seen before, so we finally got to see it and see it on the big screen. Dog Day Afternoon, which was fantastic, and we actually went to a convention a couple months later and met Chris Sarandon, who is in that movie, and we got him to sign our Blu-ray, and he was very happy about that. He was very, very nice man, and he was talking to us about making Dog Day Afternoon. We went to see Goodfellas, Ange, our people. We went to go see Goodfellas. Oh, and we went to go see Frank Henenlotter's Brain Damage, which is about a guy who has a growth in his spine that pops out and makes him kill people. It's a thoroughly disreputable, scummy movie. We saw it as part of this theater's I forget why they were showing brain damage, but the people that we saw it with in the other theater were clearly had a few before they came and watched the movie because it was a rowdy crowd. And then we went to go see Sullivan's Travels, the Preston Sturges classic. So just in those six movies I mentioned, that is like that's the broad-based, movies that we take in here at K2HQ Video. Ed Wood, In the Mood for Love, Dog Day Afternoon, Goodfellas, Brain Damage, and then Sullivan's Travels. So we saw a lot of interesting stuff on the big screen. That was all that was just an absolute blast. So, Chris, you're next.
In fairness, brain tumors do usually kill you, but they don't usually acquire sentience before they
No,
do so.
it's
So.
there's a line in the movie, and if you say it absent its context, people will be horrified. But there's a line where the little tumor says, "Hey, Brian, why don't we go kill some hookers?" And that is something Kelly and I say to one another once in a while. Absent any real, "Hey, why don't we go kill some hookers?"
It sounds like the perfect. There's a double feature. Have you ever seen From Beyond?
Oh, yeah, I love
In
From
From
Beyond.
Beyond, Chris, the pineal gland grows out of the front of his head and gets a little mouth, and it has to eat other people's brains.
There you go.
That
Wow.
we should. That's like the perfect Halloween double feature.
There you go. Stuart Gordon. Good stuff. Good stuff. So, anyway, yeah.
Maybe don't use that line in public, Rob. I think that would be
No, we
bad.
do not say it in public. No. I mean, this is Florida. Things are pretty
Keep
loose,
that
but
one
we
at
don't,
home.
not that loose. So, okay.
Okay. Okay, moving on. So the
Follow
next
that,
one,
Chris.
yeah, the next one is I saw was Mickey 17.
Oh, we saw that. That was next on my
Oh.
list as well.
Okay, there we go. Okay, well, we can talk about it. So Mickey 17 is in had a fantastic trailer. It was one of those trailers where we have to see this film. This looks really good. It is in some ways a very similar premise, but a totally different movie to the 2009 film Moon with Sam Rockwell, in that it's a sci-fi film with clones of the same people who do these very menial jobs. But Moon is very isolated. He's the only person there. He has the robot. He goes out, he does his thing. In Mickey 17, he is what's called an expendable. He's basically cloned multiple times in order to do terrible jobs or terrible scientific experiments in which it is understood that he will die. And then he just get turns over. So Mickey 17 is the 17th in this lineage. And Mickey 17 is slightly unusual in that he fails to die. He should die. He's in some sort of accident and actually survives. So they clone Mickey 18, only for Mickey 17 to inconveniently turn up. And 17 and 18 could not be more different. 17 is kind of cute and kind of sweet and kind of goofy. I kind of got Buster Keaton vibes from Mickey 17, and number 18 is basically a bit of a sociopath. And they are on this mission to a far off world, led by Mark Ruffalo, who is pulling his very best Trump impression and having the time of his life. And they get to this world, and yeah, it kind of goes from there, really. So I think the trailer was better than the movie. It was a good movie and I enjoyed it. But it was a bit of a strange one, and showed some of the humans in not great light, and some of the clones in a much better light, and it all ends very happily. So there we go. Rob, you saw it. Ange, did you see this as well?
No, I
No.
didn't see it.
Okay.
I can totally
Okay.
remember the previews and right, the Robert Pattinson, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And I can remember saying like, "Oh, this is one of the ones that I should see because it looked fascinating." And then I think it's one of those things that then it just gets buried in the streaming list and you just don't think about it anymore.
Yep.
So
Yeah.
I'll have to put a star next to it.
We went to
Rob, what
see
did you
it.
think?
Yeah, we went to see it because it was Bong Joon-ho, and we've liked all of his movies pretty much. I think every one that we've seen. I think we've seen every one except Mother. We've seen Memories of Murder, and we've seen The Host, and we've certainly seen Parasite.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot. I think it's going to be a movie that's going to age really well. But I think it's kind of thing that like 5 years from now you're going to watch it and you're going to go, "Oh, this was really great. Why didn't this do better?" That kind of thing. Because it just kind of came and went. The trailer was very different. than the movie you ended up getting, because it was using the Dean Martin song "Ain't That a Kick in the Head," and it had a, just a tone that the movie doesn't really have. And I think Warner Brothers was a little like, "How do we market this?" Because it's darker, but it's also sillier, but it's also got more to say. It's a hard sell. And as someone that likes to go through people's IMDb profiles, because I'm just a nerd like that, I love looking at, you know, older people's careers, and you look at their string of hits, and then you'll find one in the middle and you'll go, wait a minute, what's that one? I don't even know what, you know, they did five classics, and then you're like, what's that thing? I feel like Mickey 17 is going to be that movie in Bong Joon-ho. People that are going to look back, they're going to go, oh wow, Parasite, he won the best at, wait a minute, Mickey set, what is Mickey 17? I don't even know that one. And then you're going to go back and find it, and then I think it's going to be quite delightful. So we liked it. We liked it.
I mean, that's interesting thought, actually, because Parasite is a bit of a weird movie as well. It's a sort of, you know, comedy kind of hustling movie to start with, which turns into a bloodbath at the end. And you know, Mickey 17 has got these sort of twists and turns in genre as well. So maybe he likes playing with that kind of, you think you're going in for one thing and you end up seeing something totally different. I don't know. But yeah, Parasite's a bit of a favorite here as well. So that's kind of another selling point for us to go and see it. It was, you know, we like Parasite a lot. So yeah, there
You
we go.
know,
It's an interesting film. It's a challenging film. I think if you're up for something that isn't quite what it seems on the surface, I'd definitely say, you know, worth your time. But yeah, not a straightforward sci-fi film.
I didn't even know he directed it. And Rob, you said The Host. Is that the one about like the giant sea creature that sort of like kidnaps the girl, right? Which also is like, is this a Godzilla movie or is this like a family drama, right? You know,
Yes.
sort of a thing.
The
And
answer is
so.
yes.
So yeah, right. And so it's probably one of those things where he really likes to say, like, okay, like what if Kramer versus Kramer met Godzilla? Like, okay, well, you know what I mean, right? And so you know, that makes it even more interesting to me because I would have said, like, oh, this is like some, you know, YouTube film guy that made Mickey 17 because he got some money. No, I didn't realize it was from him. So now I'm gonna star it twice.
All
Just
right.
so to see.
Double starring it.
Yeah, I believe Kramer versus Kramer versus Godzilla is the 37th proposed Godzilla movie.
That would
So,
have been an
you know.
amazing title, right? Kramer versus Godzilla versus Kramer. That would have been unbelievable.
Yeah.
That would have been a $200 million movie. That would have been a huge hit. So, okay. Ange?
Meryl Streep wins for sure. No. Well, you know, I'll tell you, Rob, I listened to the list of ones that you saw, and I'll say, like, Dog Day Afternoon is such a great movie, and like in the middle of like a string of Sidney Lumet monster films,
Oh,
right? Like
unbelievable.
he could have like retired at the top of his
Serpico,
game in like
Murder on the Orient
19.
Express, just boom, 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 boom,
Yeah,
boom.
12 Angry Men, Network. I mean, like, you know, he could probably just say, like, in 1979, I'm done. And of course, Goodfellas is wonderful. There is a theater up near the hospital, and that is sort of like an art house theater that also shows old movies. And because Boston is in the middle of, I think, something like 25 colleges, they have a variety of different sort of like threads that they do, including showing classics, but they have like one called Science on the Big Screen, where they get a scientist to literally from like MIT or Harvard to come and talk about
Wow.
things, right? Or they get like a film studies
Oh
person
my
from
God.
BU or BMC to give like a little half hour, like, you know, lecture about the history of the film before they show the movie. And it's really fantastic. Like, I try to do that. So, like, they had somebody talk about nanites for The Incredible Shrinking Man, and they had it like a Russian political science person talk about Solaris, and those are really great. The one that I saw on the big screen, a little bit of a side thing here, sorry, is that there was no prelim, but they showed Brief Encounter on the big screen, which I saw with Anna, and I treasure Brief Encounter. I like love that movie, you know, directed by David Lean. You know, Trevor Howard, and this wonderful story of these two people that sort of like have a very brief encounter and then come to love each other in like the most deep and profound way. As I always say about that movie, like, I wish for 5 minutes I could be as smooth as Trevor Howard is in that movie. I'll take 5 minutes of that smoothness. Right. And saw it on the big screen, and I well up every time at the end of that movie. And here we were on the big screen, and I welled up again, like the millionth time I've seen it. It's just a different experience, like you talk about when you sort of intro your movies, Rob, because I've seen it. Like, when you're having a shared experience with 100 people all watching this movie on a big screen, it just felt different. I'd seen this movie, and like every time it's on TCM, I DVR it, I own it on DVD, I've seen it a million times. But to see it on the big screen was different. It was the first time that Anna had seen it. She had heard me talk about it, so it was fascinating. And then just a side diversion, Chris, when we were in London last year, where you and I met up, I was like, the train station from Brief Encounter, where they serve tea, is a tea house, and I want to go there. And we looked it up, and it's like, it's a 6.5 hour train ride north. We were like, okay, we're not going to go there, but we thought about it. So I keep saying,
Next time, Ange. Next time, there's
if we
always
ever
something to
go
look
back, I
forward
got to go
to.
back to so soon. But you know, he plays a very enthusiastic physician who cares about his patients deeply, and then falls in love with this woman. They're both married, and it's how they try to sort of navigate the difficulties of that. Of course, in like late 1940s Britain, and so the whole overlay of social norms at that point. So I was thrilled to see it on the big screen. It was just wonderful for me. It's really one of my favorite movies of all time.
I've never seen Brief Encounter. I've just never gotten around to it.
Oh,
So I will have to check that
it's so
out. Well, I know
classic,
it's a classic, you know
classic.
what I mean? I've just never gotten around
Oh,
to
so
it.
and the thing about it, Rob, that I'll say, like, it's based upon a Manolo Caro play that I think he was involved in the screenplay. It's David Lean early in his career, so this is not 70mm Omar Sharif a million miles away, right? It's a cramped film. It takes place in train stations and restaurants and tiny little apartments. And so it's just unusual to see Lean that way, knowing that he then does Zhivago and Lawrence of Arabia and Bridge Over the River Kwai, right? It's just a different directing style, but I just think it's absolutely lovely.
Never has a British Rail tea room been so romantic.
On a side note, Ange, if that theater gets an MIT scientist to introduce brain damage, I will come up to see that. I really want to see an MIT scientist talk about
Just
the.
gotta tell you, it was crazy. So it's like we're going to watch The Incredible Shrinking Man. Now I've seen that since I was a kid, right? Oh, he's fighting a spider with a pin over a piece of cake, and then this guy comes on and says, like, today we're going to talk about nanotechnology, and then gave this like mind-blowing, what am I hearing, right? And then it's like, okay, and now it's The Incredible Shrinking Man, and it's like, oh, the boat
Wow.
goes through some gas and I start shrinking, right?
And if you know a neurosurgeon, you are honor bound to nominate them to do that movie, the intro.
Absolutely.
Sure.
I will fly to
Fantastic.
Florida to go to that and fly to Boston if they do that, because I would want to see a scientist try and explain the sentient talking growth that comes out of a guy's skull and it can talk and eat people and whatever. Anyway, so I saw a couple more repertoire films back to back. We saw Sunset Boulevard, which is fantastic, absolutely, masterpiece, and then Doctor Strangelove. So we saw two classics back to back. I will say about Doctor Strangelove, there was a drunk woman in the audience who kept describing what she was seeing on the screen very loudly. The bombs are falling, all that kind of stuff. At one point, I got so annoyed, I turned to her and went, shh. And she went very loudly, oh, I'm sorry, I'll be quiet. And I'm like, you don't need to say that part. You just be quiet. That's it. That's fine. And then late, then the movie ends, and we all walked out. And then I was waiting outside the theater for Kelly. And then that woman comes out of the doors talking to someone else. And absent any context, I just heard her say, I'm not a lesbian. Okay, I don't know how they got to that part of the conversation, but nevertheless, she was obviously very much enjoying Dr. Strangelove, having had a couple of drinks in her beforehand. So that's what that is. So, all right, Chris.
Okay, so the next one was Wes Anderson. We have been on a Wes Anderson kick for some years now, starting with Isle of Dogs, and then The French Dispatch, and then the most recent, and Asteroid City, and the most recent one was The Phoenician Scheme, which I know Ange has seen. I'm just been catching up on DVD on the back catalogue, and I would say The Phoenician Scheme was complicated. It was a sort of caper movie more than some of the others have been. Complicated plot. I mean, stellar cast as always, and beautiful cinematography and beautiful art direction as always. The plot is complicated. Zsa Zsa Costa is a at best dubious and at worst immoral businessman. He has a bit of a penchant for hand grenades. He has a sort of near-death experience and is taken up into limbo, maybe, and tries to rebuild his relationship with his daughter, who's a novice nun. It's got lots and lots of twists and turns. I would argue perhaps slightly more complicated than it needs to be, and maybe too complicated for its own good. Enjoyable, not my favorite Wes Anderson movie, I'm going to say, but others have seen this. So, Ange, I know you saw it. What did you think?
I am a big Wes Anderson fan, and Anna's a big Wes Anderson fan. And so when that was coming out, we said, we know that we have to see it. We saw The French Dispatch on the big screen at the same little theater. It was playing The Phoenician Scheme. We said that we were going to see it. It's funny, like when you say, like, what's your favorite? Like Moonrise Kingdom is so wonderful. The Budapest one that I always mess up the title is wonderful. I think the Fantastic Mr. Fox is brilliant. My kids love the Fantastic Mr. Fox. And so we saw this and we're watching it, and I was like, it almost feels like someone told Wes Anderson, oh, it's not Wes Anderson enough. And so it just became like Wes Anderson on steroids, which that's where I think this whole complicated, like, oh, look, here's a variety of weird shoe boxes and open up this one. But when you open up this one, then, the next one will say this. And then it becomes, and it's, and I was like, I think he's just trying to outdo himself here. And as a result, he sort of outdone himself. So I probably would agree that in his filmography, I'd probably put that relatively low, because I think that it was overly complicated in a way that became too cute for its own good.
I have not seen it. I have it on my Peacock stream queue. Again, one of the nice things about watching movies on Peacock is the street the like their servers are never overloaded with customers, so it never pauses. It just goes right through, because I'm like one of the four people that has a subscription to Peacock. But I do want to see it because I like Wes Anderson, and Rushmore remains my favorite of his. So I do want to see that. Plus, I love Benicio del Toro. Like, I just love him. I mean,
Yeah,
he's the
he's,
lead of the movie.
yeah,
So,
yeah. Whatever he's in, he's so good, for
yeah.
sure.
I think he's in every frame of the thing. It's his movie.
Good. All right. So, Ange, you want to go next?
I want to say, it's funny that you mentioned Dr. Strangelove, because one of the things that we saw on the big screen was the Steve Coogan theater performance of Dr. Strangelove,
Oh, I wanted to see
which
that.
they then do this, whatever they call it, National Film Day, something
National
or other.
Theatre.
And they showed it at this theater. Again, I'm going to keep mentioning, I'm going to plug it. Coolidge Corner Theater in Brookline, Massachusetts. It's absolutely a great place. And so they were showing it. And one of the things, Chris, was that when we were in London, it was actually live on stage. We didn't even know it. And we were like, oh my God, we would have definitely gotten tickets to see it for two reasons. It's Strangelove is one of Anna's favorite movies, and Coogan is one of her favorite performers. And I've come to love Coogan. I love those road movies he did with Rob, whatever his name is. And of course, he's wonderful in everything that he does. And so we saw that there, and it was absolutely brilliant. He does all of the Peter Sellers parts, and so like you see, like he'll like go behind a black curtain and then must do a absolutely tremendous costume change to then come in the other side of the stage and sort of appear as a completely different character. Channeled Sellers pretty well, but the whole thing I thought was brilliant. And so it's not exactly a movie, right? It's a cinema experience of a filming of a play. But since you saw the original Strangelove, I figured I would say, like, the other movie that I saw was this version. Again, when you say, I'm sitting in a movie theater, the people that want to be here want to be here to see Steve Coogan play Peter Sellers roles in Strangelove. And so you know that it's going to be that sort of theater experience. This isn't like Thunderbolts, which I might talk about later, where like who knows who's walking into this movie, right? This is like a niche crowd who's here to appreciate what they're seeing. And there probably won't be somebody saying, like, they're dropping the bombs, right? Like in your Strangelove experience. But I thought it was great. And I love Coogan. I don't know if anybody else thinks that he's good. I forgot that he was in Hot Fuzz until I recently rewatched, where like everybody is in Hot Fuzz, but he's in it in a very small part, which I thought was wonderful.
How did they handle it when two Peter Sellers' characters are on the screen at the same time? Because the
Well, it
president and Strangelove share scenes together.
yeah, I think they
Sort of.
must do something where there's like they either like say the president is not remotely doing something and they show it up on a
Okay.
screen. It must be either
Okay.
pre-taped. And then sometimes when they're in the same scene, but like one of them isn't speaking, clearly they do like the Hannah Montana swap. He like goes behind, somebody else comes out dressed as the president while
Okay.
he comes out and comes in on the other side. But it was we were so happy that we were able to see it because we realized we missed seeing it live when we were across the pond. And so when it came there, we thought it was great.
All right. I saw next up for me, we saw Sinners. I don't need to get into too much about Sinners. Everyone, it's like one of those things you're like, oh, this is just a modern masterpiece. This is going to last forever. We thought it was every bit as great as its reputation has, it's come to earn its reputation. It features one of the great movie moments, I'd say, of this or any other year in a very long time, of this dance sequence where the music, we sort of burst through the limits of time and we see all forms of music, African American music, across the world, across time. And for a second, you're like, wait, what is happening? All of a sudden, this movie's set in the 30s, and now I'm looking at guys doing like Parliament Funkadelic. And then you're like, oh, now I get it. And it's an incredibly transporting scene. And one other thing I'll say about Sinners is I don't want to see a sequel. I don't want to see, like, just make this be a one-off. Ryan Coogler, go off and do what you want to do. That said, there is one moment in Sinners that features this pack of side characters who show up in the movie for about 3 minutes, and you were like, they could be their own movie. You're like, wow, you could spin that off as a sidequel and follow these people in a completely separate movie. That might be really entertaining. And that's a movie that is like brimming with concepts and brimming with ideas, that it could introduce this little cluster over here, and you're like, oh, all right, I guess they're out of the movie now. And you're like, they're just off having their own lives. I'm like, that could be its own thing. So I hope they never do Sinners 2. There's no need to do it. But if they ever wanted to do a sidequel with these characters, these sort of vampire hunter Apaches, that I might be up for. So did either one of you guys see Sinners?
No.
It's also on my Anna doesn't like horror movies, so she's like, I
Okay.
don't think I'm interested in seeing it. And so it's just been a matter of me having to carve out the time to see it. It's also on that magic to watch list
There you
as
go.
I sort of keep doing it. I've heard so many good things about it. Heck, even the Franklins covered it in House of Franklin's Night on the
Yeah,
network,
one
and
of the
they
rare
look right.
modern movies they've covered in
Yeah,
House of
and
Frankenstein, yeah.
so everybody has talked about it so passionately. It's definitely one of the ones that I have to see, but I haven't had the opportunity yet.
Great stuff. All right. So, okay, Chris.
Okay, next one we saw was not my choice and is probably my least enjoyable movie I existed. Was a movie called Friendship, starring
Oh,
somebody
Tim
called
Robinson.
Tim Robinson, who I was not aware of. I suspect is probably, was he SNL
Briefly, he was on like
person,
one
briefly, yeah.
season, and that's it. Yeah.
So the story is that this is a guy, a sort of middle class guy called Craig, who's a marketing executive, and he's trying to form a bond with his new neighbor, Austin, who's a local TV weatherman, who's Paul Rudd. This is completely the wrong sort of humor for me. I really do not like that kind of socially awkward,
Oh
just
boy.
cringy thing. You know how comedians say, they can be having the best show of their life, and there's the one person sitting there who's not laughing. Listener, that was me. Everybody else had a terrific time. I'm sure this is a fantastic movie. It was just not the movie for me. I'm going to cling to the network's tenet and say, find your joy. Paul Rudd's really good. I do think he was really enjoyable in it, but I'm sure it's a fine movie. And if you like those sort of incredibly cringeworthy comedy, you'll love it, but it just was not for me. So there we go. Sorry.
Okay.
You know, I
Anybody
didn't see it.
else?
I didn't see it because I saw the preview, and I also don't like cringeworthy comedy. Like, I struggle watching The Office because I
Yeah.
cringe so
Oh.
much watching The Office. I'm like, I
Yeah.
can't watch this. It's not funny to me.
Yeah.
It like makes me feel not well. And so
Yes.
I saw the preview and I was like, next, not for me.
I did see it on HBO Max just actually like just last week, and I knew what I was getting from Tim Robinson because he did the HBO sketch show, I Think You Should Leave. And that show, as most sketch shows are, very hit or miss, right? Some of it was really funny, and a lot of it I thought was not funny. But I knew that that was his humor going in. And it is, even if you like cringe comedy, this is, I think, tough going because it is really cringe. I mean, he's so cringe that you're sort of like, what is wrong with this guy? You know, like he's so it's an acquired taste. I admit I didn't laugh a whole lot, but I did. I don't even know if enjoy is the right word for it. I sort of appreciated it, what it was trying to do, but it's pretty dark stuff. It's pretty, and I think without Paul Rudd, it would be almost completely unpalatable.
The one thing I did quite like was probably the best scene of drug taking, where he takes drugs and nothing happens.
Yeah, he like gets in line for a sandwich or
That
something, and like that's it. Like that's the whole drug
was
experience.
quite funny. That was a kind of he's expecting this hallucinatory extravaganza, and he's just stood in the back office of a place that he just happens to have scored it from. Nothing. Is this it?
Yeah.
That was the best gag.
Tough going.
Otherwise, not for me.
If you don't like cringe comedy, yeah, that is not the movie for you. Holy
Nah,
jeez.
nah,
So,
nah.
okay, Ange.
I was very happy to see on the big screen 1 week before it hit Netflix, Del Toro's Frankenstein. So it
Awesome.
was the 70mm print of Frankenstein on the big screen. It was there for like 3 days. I don't know if Netflix had to put it out on the big screen for Oscar contention. I can only imagine that might be why.
Also,
But
because Del Toro insisted.
yeah, but if you're a Del Toro fan, it is absolutely brilliant. It's exceptionally close to the book, which I love. So I was very happy that it was faithful to the story that Shelley was trying to tell. I think Oscar Isaac is brilliant in it. There's a little bit more like mother type stuff in there with Frankenstein and his relationship to his mother and his abusive father that I don't think is necessarily in the book itself. But the imagery is crazy. There's like at one point the wife's wedding gown is suspiciously like the Bride of Frankenstein's from the Elsa Manchester film from the 30s. Color has a big thing to do with it. Like when you see red, you know that it's like life, and when you see purple, you know it's like not life. And it was just visually 100% stunning. I don't know if the Frankenstein monster Wolverine, because like he gets blown to like his arm gets blown off, like regenerates it, and he's strong enough to pull a boat. And so it's like a little bit Kryptonian in nature, but overall, I would say if you're a fan of Frankenstein, if you're a fan of Del Toro, if you're a fan of Oscar Isaac, or Mia
Mia
Goth.
Goth, yeah.
She's also in it. She plays both the mother and the wife. It's definitely worth seeing. It's streaming now, right? So everybody should see it. I love Del Toro. I thought Pan's Labyrinth was great. I thought The Devil's Backbone, which is like his one of his first horror movies, was wonderful. I feel like Shape of Water was his. We should have given this to you for Pan's Labyrinth, so let's give you all the Oscars for Shape of Water. But I thought that was also a good movie, and so I would highly recommend it. I don't know if either of you guys have seen it.
We did. We saw
Yeah,
it on the big screen. Yeah.
I saw it on the small screen just the other week, actually. Completely second Del Toro film that I've seen this year because I caught up with Pinocchio. for the first time this year, which I preferred. I thought Frankenstein was beautiful, as you would expect. I thought the imagery was fantastic. Again, another stellar cast. It is melodrama, but for me, it was slightly overacted. It was a little bit camp and a little bit up there, but thoroughly enjoyable. And like you say, the sort of authenticity and faithfulness to the original text, I thought was terrific because you don't see that very often. And I thought it was great. So yeah, thoroughly enjoyable, a little bit over the top for me, but there we go.
When you guys become doctors, do they give you the little woman action figure that you can take apart with all the little pieces? These are some you guys just get.
Yes, and a
No.
lot of electrical kit as well.
Yeah, in medical school, Rob, they actually give you a real dead person to take apart to learn how things
Yes.
go. That's
Oh,
called
no, thank you.
that's anatomy class, right? So.
Yes,
Oh,
that's
boy.
my first experience of seeing a dead body was seeing about 45 of them all in one room simultaneously at the
Yes,
age of 20.
yes,
Yeah.
yes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I asked. So, okay. the next big screen movie I saw was David Cronenberg's The Shrouds. We are huge Cronenberg fans. And you mentioned The Fly earlier. We've seen his 70s, 80s classics, The Fly and The Brood. We've seen those literally hundreds of times, I think, at this point. And The Dead Zone and Scanners and all that stuff. So Rabid, all another thing about a little appendage that goes and kills people. I was a little disappointed with The Shrouds. I thought it was an interesting premise of a camera that allows you to look at your loved ones after they've been put in the ground, which is a very Cronenbergian, like, why would anybody do that? That's horrible, but yep, that's what we're going to do. But I just don't think it was developed in a way that was quite as compelling as I hoped. I will say there is one moment, and I'm not going to share what happens in it, but there is one moment of body horror in the movie that was so upsetting that I was like, oh, well, that's classic Cronenberg. Where someone has sex with someone else and something horrible happens, and you're just like, oh no, oh my God, that was felt very Cronenbergian. But otherwise, we both kind of were a little like, okay, that didn't quite land the way we were sort of hoping for. But nevertheless, it's David Cronenberg. Happy he's making movies, and they're back in the big screen. So we were happy to have at least seen it. So.
It's funny. I love him, and that came out, and then I heard these tepid reviews, and I said, I think I'm just going to wait to see this at some other time. Can I tell you? I don't know, Chris. Have you ever seen The Brood?
No.
If you've never seen The Brood, early 70s,
Oh, that's a rip.
there's a great autopsy scene in it that I quote so many times that even my girlfriend, who doesn't like necessarily Cronenberg or Hari, she's like, "But what's the most interesting part of that autopsy?" Like, she'll feed me the line, and I'll be like, "There's no belly button. There's no, how are these things born?" Right? So when you're in a loving relationship like that, that like your line gets fed to you at the right time, it's fantastic. So it's interesting to hear you say that, Rob. It is one of those ones, like, it actually came and left my memory. But now that you mention it, like, I remember that we were thinking of going to see it. Love Cronenberg.
All right, Chris.
Okay, I'm going to introduce it. This is the moment the network has been waiting for. Superman.
Ah.
Okay, so I think we all saw it, right? And
Yes, of
I am
course.
fascinated to hear Ange's take on the Supergirl cameo. I'll start by saying I set this movie up to be a big deal. We were going to go out. There's a cinema near us which has a restaurant attached. We had dinner and we started watching this. And my other half, about a third of the way through, went, I'm not feeling so great. I think I'm going to go. And I, like a good nerd, sat through the rest of the movie, but wasn't really paying very much attention because I was a bit worried about how he was doing. So I've got slightly, I think I need to see it again to do it full justice. I thought this was a very good but not excellent movie in a field of pretty ropey Superman movies, with one exception that Rob knows very well. I thought it was a really interesting introduction to what is going to be, fingers crossed, with all the Netflix malarkey going on, the Gunniverse. I liked a lot of it. I thought he was great as Superman. I thought Lois was great. I thought Mr. Terrific deserves a movie of his own. Metamorpho was really good. I thought Crypto was great comic relief. I thought I really like Nicholas Holt, but I Lex sort of missed for me a bit. I thought he was a bit too jealous and not quite enough scheming. And I thought the rift that was splitting the world was a bit of a weird villain, sort of not. I thought there were better things you could do, but Superman doesn't have great villains. So I thought it set out its stall really well, and I'm intrigued to see what happens. And I'm going to throw it open to you guys.
Ange?
All right, I'll go. So one of the things that I thought was interesting was that you don't see Krypton explode. You don't get an origin. He assumes that you know it. Great, right? There's
Great.
an opening screen that says, like, 300 years ago, these beings appeared. 30 years ago, Krypton exploded. 3 years ago, he comes out of Superman. 30 minutes ago, he gets his butt kicked. He said, gone, that he was, like, sick of hearing it must be hard to make a Superman movie because everybody's like, he's too powerful. So I'm intentionally going to do a movie where that's not true. Superman gets the, like, snot kicked out of him
It really
for
does.
almost the entire movie. In
He
fact, I don't even.
bleeds. He bleeds on the snow.
Yeah, in the first 30 seconds, right? He is like, okay, this is like a legitimate threat. Superman just got the snot kicked out of him. As a result, I think, though, I don't know if he gets like a breakthrough, super great, like, oh, that's the thing. Like, there is the scene like where he stands up and the sun's behind him after he's like beaten up the Lex troops and Ultraman. But I don't know if there was like a true like kapow moment for him. Like people still talk about like who's got you? I'm holding up the helicopter, right? Or you know, crushing General Zod's hand. Like oh, you know. I agree, but he was excellent as Superman. I think he had like that earnestness and integrity that Superman needs. She was mind-blowingly good as Lois Lane. I thought like Jimmy Olsen being like Mr. Action that like women can't keep their hands off of was like an interesting take on all of it. I think he likes to make Guardians of the Galaxy, right? So like there had to be like all of these Justice League characters and like trying to learn to like come together as a team. So I thought it was a little bit like is it truly a Superman movie or is it like a Justice League movie? I also thought the rift was like one threat too many. When you've got Ultraman and you know the woman from the Authority and Lex himself, like that's enough of a threat to me. I don't know if I need the world to be like being literally split apart as something else to go on. But still, I would say like B plus A minus, right? I think the actors and the characterization was so spot on. And ultimately, what I ended up thinking about it, to like wave my comic book nerd flag is if you think about a comic book story these days, it's six issues for the trade. And if you break this movie up in like the first issue, like he gets beat up by the Warhammer of Moravia. The second issue, like he has to go into a pocket universe to save, you know, Metamorpho. The third issue, right? You know, he's fighting Ultraman in space. The fourth issue is stopping a rift. If you think about it in comic book terms, it made a little bit more sense to me. But I do think it was one of those things that there was a lot in there. There's the Supergirl cameo at the end. I know what story it's based on. I'm hoping the movie ends with an inspirational ending and not as horrifically, you know, dark trauma that somehow it becomes that she sees things better. I think the actress is going to nail the role. I think that she's going to be really good. Loved Crypto too.
We talked about it on Superman Movie Minute extensively, so I don't need to get too into it. I enjoyed it a lot. I watched it again on HBO Max not that long ago, and it goes down easy. But that's one of the things that, like, unlike the lugubrious Snyder Superman films, this thing goes down like a piece of candy. And that for a Superman movie, that's kind of what I want. I agree, Ange. It doesn't have like a great dun da 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 moment of Superman, which I think it could have used. But in terms of setting up a new universe, I think it did a great job. And you know, time comes for us all because I know why you didn't love the Supergirl cameo, and I completely appreciate why you don't, but I loved it. I loved the energy it brought to it. I loved somebody calling Superman bitch. Like, I just thought that was funny and very charming. But I also realized people loved the Aquaman movies And I didn't love those movies because it was an Aquaman I didn't really recognize. And so now I'm on the flip side of that, you know, where I'm like, I realize, Ange, that's not a Supergirl that you really enjoy as a comic book character being done as a movie. But at the same time, I'm like, I did love that cameo. Like, I really thought it was funny, and I'll definitely go see the movie. And we saw it in a great context. We saw it with Captain Entropy and DC Dave. It was a great time with all of our families and stuff. So I enjoyed it quite a bit, and it was a great, you know, I'm excited for Supergirl. So.
Yeah, I'll just say it was like the two of you. My birthday is around the opening night. I went with my three daughters and my girlfriend. We went to a restaurant beforehand, saw it the first night. I got a ridiculous crypto commemorative cup that's on my bookshelf. And it was just such a wonderful like family event seeing the movie. And even when it was over, my kids were like, "It's been a while since we had that superhero energy all together, Dad. It was like so great to like see this movie with you." And I was like, "This is forever going to be a treasured moment."
That's
So
great. That's great.
great.
All
Number
right.
one, and before we leave this feed, I need to see the crypto cup.
Oh,
And
right. Yeah.
number two, I want to tap into the power of this network to make things happen because I think we have to manifest as the Fire and Water Network to make Ange part of the Supergirl movie celebrations.
Oh,
I think
absolutely. Yeah. Oh,
we should
yeah.
stand by one of our own and just put the hard yards in on his blog. And I think we should start petitioning James Gunn now. It starts here, listeners. This is where
Ange's
you
been doing
start.
it. Ange has been
Yeah.
doing it, and I've been, you know, like I like it every time I see it pop up, Ange, because I mean it could serve as a double, like you could be the doctor in the theater in case something happens.
Yes.
So it's like a double, not Supergirl fan and attendant physician of the premiere. Be perfect.
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
funny, you know, because I say like, "Hey, I've been a fan forever. I've been writing about it forever. I would love to be part of this," right? And that, but I worry that, like, God forbid he checks out the blog. It's like, "And I loathe the story our movie is based on." So I don't know if he'll be
Well,
like,
but
"Let
Ange, that might be a good
me."
PR because they win you, well, they show you the movie
They
and
win
you
you
go, it
over.
was
They win
really
you
good. And they
over.
look, we won over this critic. That might be
Yeah.
perfect.
Okay, we need to harness the power of the network for
All right,
Ange here
we'll
this
work
year.
on
That's the
this.
2026 campaign.
We'll work on this
Yeah.
behind the scenes, everybody. So, okay. I saw a couple more repertory things. We went to go see The Empire Strikes Back with, you know, spoiler alert, great movie. The single movie that I saw in 2026 without my wife was The Blues Brothers, one of my all-time, which I just groaned in the background, one of my all-time favorite movies. I love it. It was wonderful to see it in a theater full of people laughing at the jokes, like jokes that I had long since kind of just incorporated into my life, and now people hearing it, laughing it over again. And, you know, I don't want to get into politics on this show. This show's about movies and whatever. But the scene where the Illinois Nazis get dunked into the river, the entire theater bursts into applause. And I was like, yay, nice to be in a room full of people that we all agree on how to treat Nazis, which is, at the very least, dunk them in the river. Ideally, Indiana Jones them. But short of that, you drive them off the road and dunk them into the river. And that was a great, great moment of just hearing. It was not only a laugh, it was a relief laugh. It was a clapping laugh. It was, yes, this is what, you know. So that was wonderful. I really enjoyed seeing the Blues Brothers on the big screen. So, all right, Chris, you're next.
Can I just talk about the Blues Brothers for a
Oh,
hot
sure, of
second?
course. I'm sorry.
One, that's one of those movies, whenever it's on, whatever point it's on, I'll turn it on and I'll watch, right? The beginning of the movie, the middle of the movie, 20 minutes from the ending, I will watch it. My favorite scene in it is when he's begging Carrie Fisher about why he didn't get, he's like, "I ran out of gas. Look, my tire was flat. The dog needed to be fed," right? He's just firing these excuses to her, and she's like, "Oh, I love you so much." I bust a gut every single time. And then the other story I just have to say about it is, again, to show like maybe why my first marriage didn't necessarily work. I was watching it once at my in-laws and laughing, and my mother-in-law walks in and watches 5 minutes of it and says, like, "You know, they could have like given those cars to like people that need transportation. Why did they destroy all of those cars?" And I'm like, this is the Blues. Look, what? And so, complete missing the point. But
John
anyways.
Landis was on coke back then and they wanted to smash cars. That's why that is. So, all right, Chris.
Okay. So In a pitch for the oldest movie on this list, I'm going to tell you about a special Halloween showing of 1920s The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
Oh.
I had not seen this classic silent movie before. It held the audience in absolute rapt attention, and it had a live musical accompaniment,
Oh.
which was, I had sort of anticipated the kind of slightly out of tune piano, dun, 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 nothing like that. It was creepy as hell. It was a guy, he was called Hugo Max, and it was a sort of atonal violin and lots of creepy, chilling bells and sort of percussion and things. Absolutely f perfectly mirrored the weird German expressionist thing. It's got the most staggering art direction. I mean, it's the sort of 1920s version of Wes Anderson, really, in that it's, you know, this was a couple of years before Metropolis and all of that kind of look of it. Everything's on a weird angle. You have this sort of cackling, scheming villain in Dr. Caligari, who's part of the circus. You've got this weird proto-goth assassin kind of guy, and a real good mental health twist at the end of it. I was just blown away. I mean, again, nice talk movie. I mean, it can't be more than an hour. Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And I think to Rob's point earlier about, you know, and Angie's as well about what cinema experience can be. If you can add in a great introduction, or if you can add in a lecture on nanotechnology, or if you can add live music, boy, does that make it an evening out. You know, what an experience. That will never happen again. I feel so privileged to have been there. A new movie for me, a 105-year-old movie. You know, I was reflecting, that was made in Germany 2 years after the end of World War I. You know, boy, what a thing. It was such an experience. Absolutely loved it. Can't say it's my film of the year because it's 105 years old, but what an experience. What a night out.
I can only imagine what it looks like on the big screen. I've only seen it on the small screen, right? That expressionist German feels like a fever dream. The sets, the like everything about that is like, I think I took drugs and I'm seeing this. Conrad Veidt plays the somnambulist, right? So like, and you know, famous for the German, you know, Strasser guy in Casablanca plays this like sleepwalker that gets compelled to kill people at the insistence of Dr. Caligari. So it really is just a masterpiece. So to see it with a live orchestra must have just been crazy good. I can only imagine that experience.
I have never seen Dr. Caligari, but we do have a personal connection to it in that there is a sketch show with Fred Armisen and Carrie Brownstein that ran in the two or like the mid 2000s called Portlandia. I don't know how much Ange or Chris you're familiar with it, but there is a sketch in it where, and I'm not going to get into the details of it too much, but basically Fred Armisen is a mailman delivering DVDs to Carrie Brownstein, and her favorite movie is Katherine Heigl's 27 Dresses, and he recommends The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari to her because he's a complete film snob, and when she talks about that she's never seen it, he points out, he's like, oh, well, you got to see it on Blu-ray. And when she says she doesn't have a Blu-ray player, he kind of rolls his eyes. And unfortunately, that has now become the catchphrase in our house for when I'm being a little pretentious about movies, where my wife will just say to me, you don't have Dr. Caligari on Blu-ray. To be honest, fair. So it's a little hurtful, but it's fair. So no, we've never seen Dr. Caligari, but I can't help but think of Fred Armisen just rolling his eyes. If you've ever seen the sketch, it's like on their, I don't know what episode you can, I don't know what episode it's from. It's a really funny sketch. It's a really, really funny sketch about movie nerds and recommending things to people who are just not right, the right audience. For anyone who loves the work of Katherine Heigl is not going to want to watch Cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
You know, Rob, it reminds me. Do you remember the old show Felicity
Oh,
with
sure.
Kevin
Yeah, I
Russell,
watched
right?
that. Yeah,
And
yeah.
so at one point in Felicity, her best friend gets asked out on a date by a film student, and she goes to like major video, the home, like the video store, and says, "Do you have Solaris on videotape?" And he's like, "Let me guess, film student is taking you out on a date to see Solaris?" And she's like, "Yeah, and I wanted to watch it before." And he's like, "Drink a lot of coffee. It's boring." And I was like, when that came out, I was like, "Who thinks Solaris is boring?" And then, like, oh my God, I'm like, we've all been there.
We've all been there.
Well, I think it took us a while to get to Superman. It actually took me a while to get to the Fantastic Four movie. And so that was the other big superhero movie that came out this summer. And I honestly watched it just a couple of days ago, almost in preparation for this. It has been one of those ones sort of lingering on the to watch list. And it's been a little bit fascinating to see, like, depending upon what you listen to, is Marvel on a downturn? Are people sick of Marvel movies? This was supposed to be like a retro look that was going to kick off the next phase. And the preview certainly looked great. And then I watched it, and I have to say, like, I went in with relatively low expectations, and I thought it was, a fine superhero movie. I thought it, the aesthetic of that like retro futuristic 60s feel was wild. Having Herbie there and it like serve a good purpose was crazy. I think Galactus looked awesome, and seeing Galactus kind of stomp around the city was pretty cool. Even I thought the Human Torch character had like a little bit of an arc and like a little bit of a story. It was clearly Sue's movie, but I thought it sort of came all together. I wish there was more for the Thing to do, is sort of the one thing that I felt was a little bit underutilized. He really, almost seemed like a side character more than anything else. But, when they go out and Galactus is sitting in his giant ship and he's sitting in his throne and the eyes go purple and he's got the big wonky helmet, I was like, boy, this is like if you told me when I was six, that there would be a live action Galactus stomping through New York City, I would never believe it. And now it's sort of, it's like, everyday fare. But I still thought it was like solid. It's not, unfortunately, I'm going to say this, it's not The Incredibles, which I still think is the best Fantastic Four movie that's been made. But I thought the characters gelled well. They showed their powers nicely, saw Galactus. I didn't even mind the Silver Surfer in this. So Fantastic Four, solid B, made me interested to see what they're going to do with them.
Chris, I assume you've seen Fantastic Four.
I am a bad nerd, Rob, because life got in the way. My some of the movie watching plans were slightly derailed, so I have not yet seen it, but
Wow.
I completely agree that that sort of mid-century modern slash retro futuristic look really appeals to me. And boy, are we due a good Fantastic Four movie. I mean, I didn't not like the ones previously with the Silver Surfer and that, but yeah, no, bad nerd, haven't seen it, really want to see it. But from what I've heard, it's it was kind of head to head with that and Superman for a while, and I think it sounds like Superman kind of won that duel. So yeah, really want to see it. Haven't seen it yet, but you go ahead, talk about it.
I liked it a lot. This seems ridiculous to say that a movie featuring Galactus and the Silver Surfer can be small scale, but it was a little like it was so focused on just the Fantastic Four, not the Marvel Universe, which I really appreciated. I loved all the, I mean, I want to live in that world, right? I just want to live in that retro future. First of all, they respect science. That's nice. I mean, like I just kind of want to live there instead of the world that I do live in. And when they were doing like the montage, right? And they're talking about all the villains and they mention the Red Ghost and his super apes. I thought that I mean, I just saw a movie 2 weeks before that that had Metamorpho in it. I thought I was past being surprised at how deep a cut these movies could do. But I'm like, once you've mentioned the Red Ghost, where else is there to go in terms of Z level characters in
They
your
showed
comic book universe?
this intelligent gorillas kind of like it was like, what am I even seeing here? So,
But not John Malkovich as the Red
not John
Ghost,
Malkovich.
which is unbelievable. So.
The only other thing that I'll mention about the movie that I thought was great, like, I don't know if there was clearly they cut to two people in an office making comic books that are
Yes.
clearly stand-ins for Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. There's like a Timely comic sign on the wall
Yep.
and all those like comes by the Behemoth Org, right? All those like giant monster comics that they made. And they're looking out the window looking at it. I was like, oh, that's like a nice little montage. That clearly would have been had Anna watching it with me. Hit pause. Let me talk for 2 minutes. Then we'll start the movie. Son
I'm going to annotate this film for you. That way you
of
really enjoy it. Well, you see, this is Jack Kirby and Stan Lee. Blah, blah, blah. That's supposed to be Flo Steinberg and yada, yada, yada. Yeah. I kind of don't want
joke is
them.
always better when you have to explain it,
Yeah. I
ain't
kind of don't
it?
want them to be folded into the MCU because I like
No.
this world. I want to just have them hang out there. But
Yeah.
I know that's what they're going to have to do. So, okay. So yeah, I actually thought both superhero movies were pretty darn good as superhero movies go. A new movie we saw in the theater was 28 Years Later. It was fine. I liked the stuff with Ralph Fiennes. The other stuff I was not as thrilled with. I liked the first one, the one with Cillian Murphy. It was fine. We both kind of walked out. We're like, eh, that was fine. And I sort of never thought about it after that. And I have to say, there's already another one coming out in like January. I'm kind of like, eh, all right. I think I'm good with the 28 years franchise at this short. Do you guys see the one of the one you see those? See that one?
No. I'm not a zombie guy,
Okay.
and so never
If
quite.
you like movies with giant zombie schlongs, this is your movie, because there's a zombie running around who is like the John Holmes of zombies. So it's yeah, it's you know not
Wow.
not not for not for family viewing, I would say. So okay, Chris, your turn.
The Dr.
Follow that.
Manhattan of zombies. Okay.
Yeah.
A little like the Frankenstein, we managed to see the new Knives Out movie in the cinema, Wake Up Dead Man, which was another interesting take in this really fascinating, becoming quite diverse franchise. Very different to the previous one, Glass Onion. Much more autumnal, winter in tone, and sort of much more low key. I mean, that one was quite sort of jokey, had quite a lot of kind of comedic elements to it. This was much more thoughtful, I guess, much more meditation on faith and its role in people's lives, and also how that can be misused. So the Josh Brolin priest is, having a bit of a cult of personality within his church, and it's just another really enjoyable, really thoughtful murder mystery. Not going to spoil who did it for anybody, but yeah, really enjoyed it. Did you guys? I think Ange, you saw it, didn't you? Rob, you seen it as well?
I
It is
saw the
sitting in.
first. It's
Go
sitting in
ahead.
my Netflix queue right now. We have not watched it yet.
Okay.
Sitting in my queue as well. I like the first two. It's sort of interesting to see the Braunig, Hercule Poirot, and these movies sort of come out almost like semi at the same time, to like compare and contrast. But I enjoyed the first two, and it's definitely also on my to watch list.
All right, Ange, your turn.
Sure. I think we've reached the level of movies that I wrote down from this year that are sort of silly, but the one that I think is not silly and actually like really made me think for a long period of time, so probably the less serious commentary I'll have, is I saw Eddington. Did you guys see that with?
It's in my queue. Like we've said 10 million times on the show, it's in my queue. I want to see it.
It's directed by Ari Aster, who did Midsommar and Hereditary, and it is this absolutely claustrophobic, crazy movie that takes place in the middle of the most lockdowniest lockdown portion of COVID. And you just see how misinformation, people entrenching themselves on sides, like the era of social media and all that sort of stuff, all plays into a whole cast of characters where none of them are particularly nice people. Some are worse than others. But I watched it, and here we are in 2025, and it made me realize no wonder the country went like a little bit mad when we were just completely locked down, You know, it just brought back. I said, this is, I said, I don't know if maybe I haven't just even dealt with what it felt like now that I'm seeing it again on the big screen to sort of remember those days of how crazy it was to be in a supermarket and please see 8 feet apart from each other, like the comic book store only allowing 4 people in at a time because they didn't want to socially overcrowd. I don't know what work was like for you, Chris, but there was a period of time in the emergency department where there were like no patients because nobody was coming in. And we were like, you know, are we going, is this the future? If it is, 80% of us are going to get fired. So it really fed into that period of like complete uncertainty. And then all of the BS that like both sides said, you know, I'm not saying both sides were wrong, but, if it really was very thought-provoking to relive that recent period of time. I think it was nominated for a bunch of stuff. It deserved it. And I almost feel like Astor brought this almost horror directing style to this real life situation that like felt unnerving.
Have you seen either one of you his other movie, Beau is Afraid?
Oh no.
That one, it's 3 hours long. See, again, my whole 87 minutes or 3 hours. It's 3 hours long, and it is just Ari Aster torturing Joaquin Phoenix's character through the whole movie. And you mentioned, Chris, earlier, you don't like cringe comedy. I'd stay away from Beau is Afraid if you don't like cringe comedy, because the first hour is just putting this guy through hell. And I found it to be very funny. And then it kind of meanders for an hour, and you're like, what the hell? And then it kind of refocuses for another hour in another way. It's curious. You're kind of like, boy, Ari Aster created this guy, and he hates this character because he's just torturing him. So I don't know. Ari Aster, are you okay? I don't know. I don't know what's going on, but I do want to see Eddington. I really do want to see it.
I'll just say, like, I've seen a lot of crazy, scary horror movies. Hereditary creeped me the hell.
Oh,
Like, I
yeah.
haven't watched it again. I'm like, well, I have to watch it when it's very bright out and I'm in a good state of mind. It was that creepy. So.
Yeah. So I went to see two more repertory movies. I went back to the NZN, which I mentioned when we saw The Brutals, and I saw Before Sunrise, which is my favorite movie of all time. And I had not seen it in the big screen since I saw it in the theater in 1995. And it still works for me. I still think it is a beautiful movie. I enjoy it completely separate from the two follow-ups. I'm kind of like, okay, those are its own thing. I can just enjoy this for what it is. And I still found it to be very powerful. And it took me right back to that moment when I saw it. And like I said, it still remains my favorite movie of all time. So it was just really great to be able to see it on the big screen again. I just think it's a really, really beautiful movie. You guys, either one of you seen that movie?
Oh, a long time ago,
A
yeah.
long time ago, a long time ago. If I watched it again, it would feel new to me
Yeah,
because I don't know if I
same.
have enough memories around it. But
Yeah. It's very adolescent, it's about 20-year-olds who find themselves really interesting, and that could be a criticism of it, but to me, it's like, it's okay. That's what you were like when you're in your 20s. And now, I mean, I'm the same exact age as Jesse and Celine, so like I'm aging along with them. And I remember being that way in that age, and then now I'm in my whatevers. But anyway, it was great. So and then we also went to see Rear Window. What the hell to say about Rear Window? The one thing I will mention is, A, we saw it on like a Wednesday night, and the theater was like packed, which was great. That warms my heart, right? To see something, a 70-year-old movie, and there's the theater's like, half, three quarters full for a movie that's so readily available. And there was a young, the this guy came out and did an intro, and he asked, is there anybody here who hasn't seen this movie before? A couple of people raised their hand, including this one young woman, like two rows behind me and to the right. And then when they got to the point where Lars Thorwald looks into the camera, I heard her like gasp. And I was like, this thing still works. This thing is 70 years. I mean, think about it. We have movies where, like, as you were mentioning, Superman, the entire planet is being rended into two. And all this movie has is one or two murders and a guy looking in the camera. And yet, here was someone who was probably in her 20s, like, and I'm like, oh man, Hitchcock, still got it, dude. Still got it. So that was great just to hear that, just to hear someone enjoy it as if it was made yesterday. I thought that was just terrific. So, all right, Chris, you're up.
Right. Okay. So I'm into my films that were not new to me. They're honorable mentions, but that seems incredibly dismissive for films which I love deeply and want to rewatch again and again. So the first one is a recommendation specifically for Dr. Ange, which is one called The Eight Mountains, which is an Italian movie, beautifully shot. It's set in the Italian Alps. It is a very small scale story of two boys who grew up in the 80s who make a friendship when they are one lives in the Italian Alps, the other one is visiting, and how their lives intertwine. And one the lad that grew up on the Alps is just spiritually drawn to the mountain and how that affects his life and the relationships around him. Thoroughly recommend to my Italian American colleague there because it's just beautiful. And the other one, which I know Ange wants to talk about, is a movie from 2022 called The Menu, which is a terrifically black comedy, slightly thrillery, slightly horror movie. If there are any TV companies making food documentaries, they need to look at this movie and think, how can I change my format to make it more like The Menu? Because boy, are the stakes high. It is, we quite like our food and we quite like watching food programs. And this is about food snobbery, about very high-end chefs and food critics and people who Instagram every last morsel that they eat. It is about people who use food for all the wrong reasons and an interloper who makes it onto this exclusive island where they grow their own vegetables, they fish their own crabs out of the sea, they graze their own goats. It's the whole kind of thing. And she's not invited to be there, but gets on there by kind of by mistake almost, and she goes through this process where the chef is going through a mental breakdown and is taking the whole thing with him. It's a really good movie. Nicholas Hoult's in this. I think he's much better in this than he is as Lex personally. Angela, I know you've seen it. You want to talk about it. Rob, have you seen this as well? Is this one
Yeah, I enjoyed
that's
it. It
come
was
to
to
you?
me, it's like a dark, violent Twilight Zone. And I mean that in the best possible way. You know, Anya
I can see
Taylor-Joy
that.
and Ralph Fiennes and oh yeah, I enjoy it. You're just like, where is this going? And then as it gets crazier and crazier, you're like, holy shit, this is nuts. So yeah, I enjoyed that a lot.
I think much like you, Chris, I watch a lot of food shows, and when you watch a lot of things on television, sometimes you think you know it, right? So there's Nicholas Hoult like saying like, oh, they're using a Paco jet to make foam. What a follow. And they're like, what do you know about work it, right? But I think the thing like, right? Again, spoilers, right? Like Ralph Fiennes is going mad, and you discover that he loved cooking, and then all of this BS that happened sucks the passion out of him. He always had to be more elegant and aesthetic and all that sort of stuff, and it made him hate cooking. So his passion became his hate. And then at the end, it's almost like his soul is revived when he gets asked to make a cheeseburger and fries, right? And oh my God, with American cheese, right? Because that doesn't split when you melt it, right? And it's funny because I bet everybody who works everywhere is. At some point, you say, like, there is so much BS involved in my job right now that is keeping me from doing why I went into this. Like, it is so frustrating. And so here it was. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm going to get people on an island and murder them the way he finds one, but I could understand it, right? And I'm sure you understand it, Chris. There's so much administrative BS. I just want to take care of the patient, and I'm being asked to do all this other stuff and jump through all of these hoops for no good reason a lot of times. That I just thought it was absolutely brilliant. I just thought it was near perfect.
Yeah, good thing all around. Just unique and right, you know, like it done like Leguizamo's great in it. And yeah, I thoroughly enjoy that. So, all right, and you're up.
I'm just going to rattle off three movies that I saw that were like, I will make it four, that were like super silly and not like for the high-ended film people, but that's okay. We love movies. So I saw Thunderbolts. the Marvel movie Thunderbolts. I thought it was pretty good. I went in with almost no expectations because I heard that it stunk, and I thought that it was fine. I thought the character of the Sentry was okay. I saw John Wick Ballerina because, you I've run across the other John Wick movies, and I'm like, well, I'm four movies into this. I may as well be five. He shows up. It is one of those movies where like people should be dead 100 times over for a million different reasons, but they're still fighting at full capacity, 2 hours in. I thought that was crazy. I saw Captain America: Brave New World, and Harrison Ford just mailing it in for a check, right? I feel like Harrison Ford has reached that Michael Caine portion of his career. He's like, I won't say no to anything because I just want to get paid. And then the last one I saw was, I started this talk by saying how The Wolfman was a complete ripoff of The Fly. I saw a movie called The Shell, which was a complete ripoff of The Substance. But so like it stars Kate Hudson and Elizabeth Moss. So they got like two people, and it's about how like, oh, it's like they're actresses and they can't, they're getting older and they undergo this experimental treatment to keep themselves young, and then horror happens, and then it's overly bloody at the end and it becomes absolutely ridiculous. And I was like, boy, the people who made The Substance should definitely sue these people. It's like so close to the other one. And I just wondered how they got such big names attached to it. So four nonsense films.
I've literally never even heard of The Shell. When I saw it on your list, I was like, I think I'm pretty plugged in, right? To like what movies are out. I may not know what they are, but like I said, like Royal Pain, I didn't know the plot of that. But like at least I've heard of it. But I was like, The Shell, what even is that? So that's amazing. That just came and went without me noticing. By the way, I should say, we didn't see The Substance in the theater, but we saw it at home. We love The Substance. I thought that was Cronenberg, not to be so reductive and just say, oh, it's like Cronenberg, but it's like the best of Cronenberg with like a feminist bent. And we thought that was just, I loved it. We were like, this is great. We were just enjoying the hell out of that. So
Imitation is the highest flattery,
yeah, oh, it was really,
right?
really good. So horror movie wise, something we saw in the big theater was Weapons, Zach Cregger's movie, which I thought was superb, was fun and ghoulish and scary. And then had a gonzo ending. The one thing about Zach Cregger's previous movie, Barbarian, I liked Barbarian a lot. And then the final third, I think it falls a little. And I was like, oh, I hope that isn't the case this time. No, this is not the case. This movie stays. Josh Brolin, we mentioned him earlier. It's really good and a gonzo violent ending. You were mentioning if Anna doesn't like horror movies, she's not going to watch. She's not going to want to see this because it is.
Well,
I really enjoyed it.
it's so funny you say that because she was like, that one's for you to see when I'm not around.
Ah,
So
there you go.
I
Perfect.
haven't seen it yet. I haven't seen it. She's like, I want no part of that. She saw the preview. There's a creepy kid walking across the street. She's like, out.
Nope,
For
I'm
these
out.
reasons, I'm out.
Have you seen that one, Chris?
No, I'm also not a huge horror guy. I mean, about the menu is about as horrific as it gets for me.
Okay.
So yeah, no, not
Okay.
really my cup of tea.
Yeah, we really like, and it has the subtext, and it's about stuff in the modern world, but it also has a very fun horror ending of just going all out, and you're like, oh my God, oh my God, you can't like, oh, like that kind of thing. Really, really good. So, okay, all right. So, Chris, your turn.
Okay, so I'm going to give my last three. So these are just films I keep coming back and back and back to. The first one is called Robot Dreams. Robot Dreams is an animated film. It is based on a Spanish graphic novel. It is completely without dialogue, and it was up for animated Oscar in 2023. It is the most sophisticated exploration of friendship in a very grown-up kind of way. It's basically the friendship between a very lonely dog who lives in New York City in 1985, and the whole movie is just filled with glorious period detail, who sees an advert on late night TV to build your own robot pal, and he gets this robot pal, and they have fantastic adventures until they go to the beach and they have a wonderful time. The robot swims and rusts and cannot get off the beach, and so they are separated, and it's how they try to reconnect, and when they can't reconnect, how they move on with their lives. It is gloriously joyful. The soundtrack is full of great disco music. And it's really sweet and sensitively done, and it's about, yeah, just the end is about how they've moved on with their lives. It is just so emotionally sensitive. I love this movie, and I don't know, I think it probably got a little bit of viewing because it was up for an award in a couple of years ago, but I don't know that it's got wide publicity. So thoroughly recommend Robot Dreams. Another one that I come back to watch at least once a year is 1999's Pleasantville, which I've tried to get Rob to watch, and I don't think you loved Pleasantville, did you? I think it's great. It's Tobey Maguire, terrific cast. Tobey Maguire, Reese Witherspoon, Joan Allen. Joan Allen can read the ingredients of a packet of hemorrhoid cream, and I would listen to what she says. She is just such a good, terrific actor. It's set in the 90s kids in a dysfunctional family are sucked into a black and white Leave It to Beaver style 50s American sitcom, and the use of very early computer generated imagery, where they go from this black and white world, which very subtly becomes colored all the way through. It is beautiful. It is a work of art. It's not without its flaws, but it is a real how society is changing through the introduction of these two kids into this very apparently stereotypical American town. Thoroughly recommend it. Again, I don't know that it did great box office at the time, but I love the movie. And the final one, we belong to an art cinema. We're members of an art cinema. And one of the perks some years ago was to get free tickets. And so I got a text from my other half saying, got free tickets for a film on Sunday. I went, great. He said, it's a Disney movie. I went, oh, okay. He says, it's a live action Disney movie. I went, seriously? It's based on an ESPN story. And I went, here is 2 hours of my life I am not getting back. This film is called The Queen of Katwe. It is based on a true story of a girl who lives in poor, does not do them justice, abject poverty. She turns out to be a chess prodigy, and how this transforms not just her life, but the lives of all the people around her. It is, if you do not have tears in your eyes at the end, you are inhuman. It is just the most touching, inspirational film. Again, who watches a live action? I don't think I watched a live action Disney movie since Night on Witch Mountain, you know? But I cannot push it enough because it just is so beautifully shot, beautifully acted, such an incredible story. I'm sure it's on Disney Plus. Go and spend a couple of hours watching it, and you will just be touched. It's one I keep coming back to. So there we go. That's my lot.
Okay. Wow. All right, Ange. Well, so you're d that's that was everything on your list, Chris?
Yeah, I'm done.
Okay, so Ange, why don't you finish up? We'll just finish up our lists in one go. So, Ange, why don't you
Perfect.
wrap up with whatever else you have on your list?
I saw Shin Godzilla, which was a Japanese Godzilla movie done by a director who did an anime series that I love, which I think is worth seeing, and I think is on HBO Max now. I went to see the movie Clue for its 40th anniversary on the big screen,
Oh.
and Leslie Ann Warren was there to do a little
Oh, that's
Q&A.
awesome.
A little
Wow, I
Q&A
love her.
beforehand. I absolutely love her. But the movie that I really want to talk about last, and it's one that I visit every time that I see it, and I recently revisited, Rob, because you said you saw it for the first time, is a black and white horror movie called Eyes Without a Face,
Oh, man.
which I don't know if you've ever seen it, Chris, but it is well worth it. The story is a physician's daughter has her face horribly burned, and so he goes out and has one of his lackeys kill young women to try to do a face transplant back in like the 50s. And how clearly the girl, the daughter who has to wear this like blank mannequin face almost the entire movie, is like psychologically devastated by everything that's happened. The physician is obviously killing people. There is a scene in it, Rob, that I'm sure you want to talk about, where they literally have what seems to be an op like a film of an operation of him flaying the skin off of one of the victim's face with clamps and slowly like freeing the
Oh man.
skin until he peels it off and holds it up. But it's another one of those horror movies that I think is like visually stunning for sure. Del Toro loves it because there were shots in Crimson Peaks that he did that mirror some of the shots in Eyes Without a Face. And it stars Volley, which do you know Alita Volley, who was in The Third
Your
Man,
favorite
Eyes
movie,
With
right?
The Third Man, Eyes Without a Face, and Suspiria. So like you can retire. That's like the triple crown for me. I want to hear what you have to say about it, Rob, because I had seen it before and then I watched it again after you said that you saw it.
All right. Well, I mean, Chris, don't watch this movie. If you don't like horror movies,
I
don't
was going
watch
to
this
say it
movie.
sounds like wholesome family viewing,
Yeah.
so
I mean, you guys, I mean, look, nobody's really listening to this. Have either one of you guys done surreptitious face transplanting stuff as a doctor on the side? You can tell me.
no, I've sewn up plenty of lacerations on faces. I've never
Okay.
removed
You've never
faces.
removed a face. All right, good to know. Thank you. Yeah, you know what's funny? I saw it on home video many, many years ago, and it was from 1960, right? So I'm not expecting it to be as gruesome as it is. And then they get to that scene, and I'm like, when are they going to cut away? And they're like, oh, they're not going to cut away. Oh, no, they're just showing this. And I just remember thinking it was really good. And, you know, there is the whole bit like he's clearly like experimenting on dogs, which I can't. I just, that's my, like, I don't want, you don't see anything, but I just, even the idea of it is just like, no, I don't want to see that in a movie. But I was like, okay, it's really good. So when it came around to a theater called The Sunray, and I was like, well, let's go see it. And we went to see it, and Kelly had never seen it. And I saw it for the second time, but, and I'm not squeamish generally. I don't get squeamish in horror movies. I can see Lucio Fulci movies and people's getting their innards ripped out and all that stuff, and it just doesn't bother me. But there was something about seeing that scene on the big screen where I couldn't like look away, that I was like, oh God, oh, all right already. Okay. You know, like, oh, it's so weird.
It's
So,
very clinical horror, which I think is
yes.
part of why it's so unsettling. Like
Yeah.
to see like a werewolf like rip an abdominal wall out and the guts come out, like I don't care, but to be like clamp, like oh okay,
Yeah.
and then, like literally like okay, I'm freeing the subcutaneous tissue.
Oh, and then
No, it's terrible.
he puts the face on his daughter, and then it starts to, you know,
It
fall
deteriorates.
and turn
Oh.
necrotic and stuff like that. Oh, it's, oh, rough stuff. Rough stuff. So, yeah.
Happy
Fun.
Christmas,
Yeah,
everybody.
fun morning at the movies. We saw it at 11 a.m. on a Sunday, so that's where we are here
Oh,
at
boy.
K2HQ Video.
Okay.
So, repertory wise, I saw a couple more. Oh, I'm sorry, Angie, did you have more, or was that it?
No, that's it. I'm all set.
Okay,
Although I do. Did Kelly like it? Eyes
she
Without a
did.
Face?
She did. Yeah,
Amazing.
we did. We sat there and had our snacks, and we were fine. So, okay. So my last bunch of movies is two repertoire films. We went and saw David Lean's Summertime. So we haven't seen Brief Encounter, but I've seen Summertime, which I absolutely love. Katharine Hepburn is a kind of an old spinster, and she saves up all her money. She's from Ohio, and she's kind of this sort of like cloistered woman, and then she saves up all her money for a once in a lifetime trip to Venice. And you know, it's always a cliche to say, "Oh, the location's like another character in the movie," but it really kind of is. And apparently, David Lean, after shooting it, fell in love with Venice so much that he moved there. Like he just decided to live there partly of the year. Now, I know you like David Lean, Ange. Have you seen Summertime?
No.
Oh, beautiful. Darren McGavin, Kolchak himself, plays a young guy who's like a Lothario, which is fun to think of. Darren, the dad from A Christmas Story, is sort of this like cock of the walk Lothario kind of guy. It's just bathed in sunlight, right? The movie is just, it has this warm glow all over it. She has this affair, yada yada yada. We actually have a insert poster from it in our bedroom. I love that movie so much. It's just, it's, I mean, no duh, a blistering performance from Katharine Hepburn. It's just a beautiful, Beautiful movie. I was so glad to be able to see it on a big screen. That was just absolutely great. And then the other repertory movie we saw was Ron, Akira Kurosawa's Ron, which is his 3-hour
Oh.
version of King Lear. I had never seen Ron. And so we're like, well, if we're going to see it, this is the way to see it. And again, Akira Kurosawa, right? You know, like, this guy's pretty good. So that was an amazing experience to see the battle scenes and everything is just at this large size. So those were two just very rewarding experiences. See on the big screen. So the last two new ones that I want to mention is that one is a documentary called Video Heaven, which is a 3-hour, I mentioned this on Fade Out before, a 3-hour documentary about video stores. So this is right.
Oh,
So
right
this
up
is,
your alley.
oh, so exactly. It's like, this is the kind of thing where if that's what you want to see, this is your movie. But if it's not boring, and it's a visual essay, it's not talking heads, it's not, oh, we have the owner of Blockbuster. It's all about the rise and the fall of video stores in the culture, but told through clips from movies about video stores, which
No.
it seems like a Herculean task, right? To like just figure out where you could find all these clips. But it's all about how, unlike other businesses and how they're portrayed, video stores were always portrayed as like know-it-all places of stress, right? That you're going and your taste isn't sophisticated enough and things like that. And I actually would have some arguments that that is exactly accurate. But if you love that culture, it was 3 hours long, and I was like, I could have watched another hour of that if you had another hour of it, you know? So that was really, again, if it's not to your taste, you're going to hate it. But if it is, you're like, oh yeah, give me more of it. Because it was just, he found all these amazing clips of like what video stores meant to the culture and all these sorts of things. And then the last big screen movie I saw was One Battle After Another, Paul Thomas Anderson.
Oh, yeah.
Best movie of the year. To me, best movie I've seen this year.
Okay.
I've read some reviews. There's some stuff where they talk about Paul Thomas Anderson, the way he writes African American women, a little problematic. And I can't argue any of that. But it's, again, it's like 3 hours, but it felt like it went by like that. It's a great action movie. It's a movie about what's going on right now. It's got amazing performances. It's funny. Benicio del Toro as this karate instructor is absolutely, he's only in bits and pieces of the movie. He is so funny and such a perfect supporting, like, I came out of that movie like charged about movies. Like I was like, yes, like it was so, I was so, because it is about what is happening in America right this second. And the fact that he could get that made through Warner Brothers on this level of a budget, was just really beautiful and impressive. And just, I just, and again, funny in all the weird Paul Thomas Anderson ways. It is my favorite movie of the year. I want it to win Best Picture. I don't know what else, I don't know. I'm just like, to me, that's it. That's the movie of the year, is One Battle After Another. So that was very, very rewarding. So then the last things I'm going to mention, four repertoire films that have a connection: Carrie, Blade, The Thin Man, and White Christmas. And the reason those were significant to me is that I got to do live on-stage intros for all four of them, which is something that I have been wanting to do for a while. And then I finally got a chance, thanks to three of them. Was at the Tampa Theater in, you guessed it, Tampa. And The Thin Man was at the aforementioned Enzian. And so I got to go on. The Carrie was first, then Blade, then Thin Man, then White Christmas. So I got to go on stage and talk for 5 to 6 minutes about the history of each of these movies, my personal connection with them, and why I think they're valuable. And it was terrifying because I don't really want to go on stage, but I was like, this is something I want to do. I think it'll be good for me. It's good for my sort of budding film historian bona fides. And I had a lot of fun. And it's funny, the white, and you can, anyone's listening to this, if you want to see them, you can go to my website or you can go to my YouTube page. All the videos are there. And White Christmas, there was about 1,000 people, which was
Wow.
more than the other three screenings combined. And at first I thought, well, I'm going to be extra scared because it's 1,000 people. It was actually better because you got more of a reaction. Like, I made a joke and I heard people heard a rumble through the crowd and came back. And like, I can't believe I'm saying this, but like, I'm actually addicted to it now. I'm addicted to like going on that stage and sharing what I love about this movie and seeing people react to it and knowing I've shared that with them and just giving people an extra little feature like, hey, you got the movie, but you also learned a couple things about it. And especially for White Christmas, like earlier this year on the show, I talked to Barry Chase, who's in White Christmas, you know? And so like that was such a great thing to be able to say, hey, I talked to a cast member from this movie. This movie's 70 years old, but I talked to someone just this year. So I hope to do more of them in 2026. There's no plans at the moment, but it was, you know, and it was utterly, I will give one story. So on, for Carrie, the first one I did, you go backstage and there's a sound guy and he's got his soundboard and the whole bit, right? And he's like, okay, he's like, at 7:59, I'm gonna ramp down the sound, hand you the mic, and you go on stage. And so I had to stand there for like 5 minutes, and my heart is beating out of my chest. I'm so terrified because I have never done this. And he's talking to me about, he's making small talk. He's talking about like seeing the Rolling Stones or something. And I'm like, dude, could you stop talking? I'm dying over here. You know, like I'm telling you know, I really thought I was gonna have a heart attack. But I went out on stage and I did it, and it goes by like that. Like you look at your notes and you're reading it, and you're just, and before you know it, you're at the end. And it's just been an amazing experience, and I'm so thrilled that I got to do it. And I just will always be special to me that I got to do something I've always wanted to do, and I was scared to do it, but I did it. So that was great. Carrie, Blade, Thin Man, and White Christmas. So,
And people should go and seek them out on YouTube because you
yeah,
are really good at it, Rob. You
thank
are
you.
very good at getting the, you know, you don't want to kind of put people off and you don't want to bombard people with information.
Yeah.
You're just right at getting just the right amount of inside information. And you know, if anybody has a chance to see Rob live next time, he'll be talking about nanotechnology. So you
Yes.
know, that's
I will be introducing brain damage next week. I'm very, very excited to talk about it. I have, before we sign off, I have to give credit, all credit due to my wife, who is a ruthlessly great editor. And she, poor girl, had to hear 17 iterations of each of these talks. And they all start at like 9 minutes because I give too much information. And she kept saying, get there faster, get there faster. And I would edit, 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 edit to where it was now down to a sharp point. And the one example I will give is Blade, because I was like, well, most people don't know that Blade's based on a comic book, right? Only comic book nerds really know that. And I had this long, long, long intro about the history of comics. And she was like, get there faster. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I realized, yeah. And I condensed almost three paragraphs of information to one sentence. And I was like, that's it. That's how you do it. So these things, as you were saying, Chris, when a movie's playing and there's something before it, you're kind of like, just get to the movie. I'm here to see the movie. So you can't make them too long. So now I've got them down to like they're 5 minutes and change, which to me is a kind of like the right amount of information of like, you know, here's some trivia, here's why I love it. There we go. But yeah, and so it's a complete team effort. And she's the one video, I don't want to say taping, she's the one shooting them. That's how we have the video of me being able to do them. So it's a complete team effort, and I'm so thrilled to do it. So yeah, so it was good year movies for all of us.
Yeah,
Got to
pretty
move it.
good. Pretty good.
So okay, one last question we'll wrap up the show with. I always do the exit questions, and so we'll kind of do that here. So Ange, so we'll start with you, and we already know your answer, what your number one answer. Let me give you your number two answer. What movie do you think are you looking forward to the most in 2026, other than Supergirl? Is there another one that you've heard about that's like, oh man, I can't wait to see that?
Oh yeah. So I'll tell you that like many comic nerds, I started out reading comic books and that then had me branch off to King Arthur, Greek mythology, Norse mythology, all of that sort of stuff. And so Christopher Nolan is doing the Odyssey. I mean, and having gone to a liberal arts Catholic college that focused on Western civilization, I had to read the Odyssey. And so I'm very much looking forward to it. I don't know if any of you saw The Return, which was Ralph Fiennes doing the very end of the Odyssey, Ulysses coming home. I did not like it. So I am ready to wash that out of my mouth. And I'm hoping that Nolan's Odyssey will do just that. So that's the one that I'm looking forward to after Supergirl.
Okay. All right. Chris, what about you?
That's a great question, right? I mean, quite often I'm entering this time of year going, well, what could be up for awards? What are going to be the big movies as we hit the award season? There's not much that immediately grabs me this year. I think Nouvelle Vague is probably the one that's looking most likely the one I'm going to see. But yeah, it's a bit weird because usually I've got a couple of movies in mind at this time where I'm going to go, got to check that one out. This year, not so much. So yeah, not quite sure. Might have to read a little bit more around them.
Now, Nouvelle Vague is, I believe, is that on Netflix now? Is that because is that the
Oh, is
Netflix
it?
movie? Yeah, because he, well, like, I know he's got Linklater had two movies, the
Okay.
one about Moss and Hart, right?
Yes.
And then Nouvelle Vague. I thought Nouvelle Vague is the Netflix movie, but maybe it's not on Netflix yet or
Yeah,
anything like that.
I
But
don't, maybe not over here, it's not.
okay.
Oh, interesting.
I'd say other than Supergirl, like I said, I'd probably put Supergirl at the top of my list. The one I'm really looking forward to is the Disclosure Day, the Spielberg UFO movie, because I'm just
Okay.
like, I'd love to see him do sci-fi again, like a UFO movie. And I thought it looked really interesting. And I still like that guy. He's still Steven Spielberg. I like the Fablemans. I liked West Side Story. And I like the idea of him going back to something sci-fi-y. So, and I thought it looked interesting. I thought the trailer looked good. So, and I mentioned it comes out like 2 weeks after Supergirl. So, I mean, it is going to be just a packed summer. But yeah, and then the Odyssey and stuff like that. And it's ought to be a real blast. So, there's a lot of good stuff. And then there's going to be stuff that just pops up out of nowhere,
Yeah.
like the aforementioned Video Heaven. I didn't even hear of it. All of a sudden, I was like, wait, there's a what? It's coming out when? Like that kind of thing. So, there's going to be stuff that comes up. So. Well, anyway, boys, thank you so much for doing this. This is something I mentioned. I always kind of wanted to do every year, and I never got around to it. So this is, and we, I love having you guys on individually, and we've been doing our MASHcast together, and that we have one of those coming up soon, a MASHcast together. That'll be a lot of fun. But
Yay.
thank you so much for taking time out of your busy medical schedules to talk movies with me. So again, thank you both for coming on now. And you are not on Letterboxd yet, or you are on
I
Letterboxd?
am not on
Okay.
Letterboxd, but my daughters were like, why aren't you on Letterboxd? So
You
I
should
think
be on,
that's going
yes.
to.
I think
Yeah.
that's perfect for your mentality, Andrew, of movies,
Yeah.
and how you like to
Yes.
catalog things. Now, Chris, why don't
Yes.
you tell people where you can be found on Letterboxd? What's your handle?
Oh, I think, yeah, there's a few of us on there. I'm going to find it now while I chat. There's a few people. Siskoid is on.
Cisco's
Sisko,
on.
man, he is a reviewing machine, ain't he? God
Yes.
bless him. He does really terrific reviews. So I think I'm called CKL, CEEKAYELL. So yeah, you can find me there. And there's a few people, I think, isn't Matt Sarois is on and Henry's on, and there's a few network names on there. So yeah, come and join us. It's great. And then
It
we could
is.
have a little gang.
It is a lot of fun. I'm there under Fade Out. I don't. I most of my handles are Rob Kelly Creative, but for Letterboxd, I'm under Fade Out. And it is. It. I don't write reviews. Like I just do star ratings. But it is really fun to kind of like watch a movie, then immediately kind of have to come up with a star rating of like, all right, well, what would I judge that for? That's kind of
Yeah.
And most of the stuff that I watch doesn't dip below 2.5. Something would have to be
Yeah.
gobsmackingly terrible and like I don't know, just a waste of my time,
Yeah.
kind of like something where I'm like, oh, that was just utter trash. But most of the time I'm like, all right, that was pretty good, or this or that. And then it's fun to go through and find an old classic that I love and go, oh, I haven't, oh, that's a 5-star movie, you know what I mean? Oh, okay. So one of the things you can do on Letterboxd, Ange, is for like your profile, you can list your 4 favorite movies. Like you're just
Oh.
all time four. Now, some people rotate them. Some people, they change it. I put my four up and they are like forever the four. It's Before Sunrise, Inherit the Wind, It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, and White Christmas. Those are the top four. So, Chris, what
Oh.
are your same four? Do you have four? Or do they rotate or are they all the same?
I haven't committed. That feels like that feels like
You don't want to commit?
pinning my colors to the master. I haven't committed. I mean, I guess things like Pleasantville, like Queen of Katwe, like Robot Dreams, they would have to be up there for me, but I haven't actually gone ahead and committed because things change, Rob,
Okay.
something can,
All right.
the new thing could always come up, and I'd have to
Okay.
drop one, and it's like, which is your favorite child,
It's right. It's hard because it's like, do I watch Before Sunrise very much? No, I don't. Like, I watch Star Trek IV. I watch Jaws. I watch Citizen Kane way more than I watch Before Sunrise. But when I'm just confronted with what are the four that when someone looks onto my page, I want them to give them an idea of my of where I am moving on. Those are the four. Those are the four. But yes, but yeah, people can rotate and stuff like that. So anyway, again, boys, thank you so much for coming on. This was just great. Thank you all for listening. Of course, you can find all the back episodes of the show on our website, findwaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show on any podcatcher of your choice. You can find us on Blue Sky at Fade Out Pod. And finally, if you want to support the Find Water Podcast Network, please go to patreon.com/FW Podcasts. There you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So big thanks to Monique D, Donald McWaters, and Mark Balbus for their support of Fade Out. I really, really appreciate it. I really, 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 I'm so tired of hearing about all the people that support shag shows. I really want people to support Fade Out. So I really appreciate the three of you who pony up for the network and ask to be on Fade Out. I really appreciate it. So thank you all for listening to this bonus episode. This was great fun. We will absolutely do this next year. We'll be back with another regular episode next month, but we've reached the end of this particular script. So happy New Year, everybody. And for now, it's time to fade out.
Oh, hey, wait. Do you mind mailing this for me, please?
Another one?
Yes.
You and your movies, huh?
Yeah, I'm a total movie buff.
Are you? I am too.
That's
What's your favorite movie?
Right now, I really like 50 First Dates with Drew Barrymore.
You like Scorsese?
Zellweger. I like light movies. I like just romantic stuff.
Have you ever heard of The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari?